Thank you. This call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sam. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's Locking of a Domain Name call on Thursday, the 24th of May. We have Juan Manuel Rojas, Randy Ferguson, Faisal Shah, Lisa Garono, Alan Greenberg, Volker Greimann, Laurie Anderson, Sherry Falco, David Maher. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milan, and myself, Gisela Gruber. We have apologies noted from Matt Schneller, Gabriel Slack, Victoria McKevdy, Jonathan Tenenbaum, Michaela Nalon, and Andriy Pazyuk. If I could also please just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. I hope I haven't heard left anyone off the attendance. And over to you, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any suggested changes to the agenda? Hearing nothing, we will continue as is. The first item on the agenda is review and finalize the surveys, which I suspect is going to take a fair part of the meeting, partly because I haven't had a chance to do my homework, not realizing I was chairing today, and partly because she's more familiar with it. Marika, can you take us through the items and identify the things which you think maybe still be controversial or need careful review?
Yeah, this is Marika. So maybe just to, before diving into what's on the screen, I've noticed as well that a few people have sent comments to the list yesterday, David and Brian from WIPO, as well as Luke, and they made comments on the original draft that was in the template that didn't take into account yet the changes that were discussed at the last meeting and that were incorporated as well in the survey that I inserted in Zoomerang. So the question would be, how do we accommodate those changes while looking at this survey, which is basically the one that's online, and the idea would be to send this out so it makes it easier for people to respond to. So I don't know if people are comfortable with just going through the survey as it is on screen, taking notes, and then looking back at the other comments that were made to see if those are in line, or to ask those people that made the comments, if they're happy with how the online survey looks, or do people prefer to first look at the comments that were submitted on the old version of the outreach questions? What is the preference?
Well, from my point, it's Alan speaking. From my point of view, I think it's reasonable, since there are relatively few comments, to sort of proceed in parallel, ask them to what extent the comments still apply based on the current version, and if any of us notice anything, then we can certainly jump in ourselves. But to have everyone compare the comments to the survey doesn't seem to be a practical use of our time. So I would ask the people who submitted them to what extent they still apply, and work from there.
Okay. As I don't think anyone is on a call yet, either from WIPO or Luke, I think it's online. We can communicate to them then after the call, and hopefully if there are any further changes, I can make those and send an updated version. So looking at the one on the screen now, that's the questions for the registrars, because the idea would be to send out two different links to the relevant parties with the respective questions there. So the first page is very basic, just an introduction explaining what the working group is about and why it's asking for input. Also providing a link to the working group's workspace so people can have a look if they want further background information on what has been done to date. And just a question asking for a name and the affiliation of the person responding. One question here would be, should this be a mandatory question? Or, should people have the option to complete the survey anonymously?
No. Well, how do people feel on the anonymous issue? No one cares? Gary?
I think it's a good idea.
You think anonymity is a good idea, David?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Sherry?
I agree with David. I think anonymity is you get better results probably from more anonymous surveys.
Okay.
And so this is Marika. So then what I can clarify just then that it's between brackets that it's optional for people to fill that in, so it's really clear that they don't have to if they don't want to.
Yep.
Then it moves into the...
Marika, if we're going to ask for a name and affiliation, we should ask for a contact, email contact also. Again, optional, but if we're going to know who it is, we should be able to get back to them if they're not someone who's part of the normal crowd.
Okay. And I'll make clear then as well that people, you know, fill in their email address, that we're not going to, you know, publish that information online.
Yes.
So then it moves into the questions, and what you'll see for each of the questions, I've tried to, you know, pick either yes or no or range questions, because I understood from the last call that, you know, people really would like to make this as easy as possible for people to complete. So on some of these questions, you know, I've just made a wild guess on what might be reasonable ranges. So I'm really asking there as well for your input to, you know, give an indication of whether the answers make sense or whether there are any other options that need to be added. So on the first question, it's, you know, asking, do you log domain names during UDRP proceedings? I think that's a basic yes-no question. I don't know if people want to add here the option as well, like, you know, other, please specify if you think there's another option that people might want to explain here. I'm not seeing any hands. I'm assuming that it's Laurie, go ahead.
It seems like it might be an option or a good idea to give them the option of adding additional information.
I think there's indeed, you can I can add a text box there. Additional information. So the next question is then asking if you answered yes to the previous question, please describe what kind of lock you use to restrict changes on a domain name subject to UDRP, to a UDRP dispute. One option is EPP lock, and then the second is the other mechanism. And if people select the other mechanism, then the question is if people can please provide further details. And thinking about this, presumably if people answer no to the first question, the survey basically ends there for them, I guess. Is that a correct assumption?
It's not obvious to me before I look at the rest of the questions, but maybe.
Right. So maybe something to, you know, we need to look back at, and if the no answer means that they won't respond to any of the other questions because they're all related to when you lock or how you lock, then we might need to say if you answer no, thank you, you're done, then you can go to the next page. So are there any, on the question four, are there any other locks that we should specify here?
Is there only a single EPP lock, or are there multiple locks which might be used in this case? Anybody?
I think it would be a registrar question, so I don't know if...
Well, a registrar or a registry. Either side should be... But we may not have the technical people on the call today. We should verify that EPP lock is a definitive answer as opposed to something which may require clarification. I can't think of anything else other, since we have, if EPP lock is definitive and then we have other, I can't think of what other options there might be.
Well, I guess beyond EPP lock, you can have a registrar lock. It's not an EPP lock, as I understand.
Well, but that's other, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Now, I thought you were saying that EPP was the only choice.
No. If we have EPP, assuming it is definitive, there's only one type, and then other covers everything.
Right. So on question five, that basically follows what you discussed on last week's call. So basically, if you answered yes to the previous question, please describe what kind of changes are prevented by the lock or mechanisms you apply. Reading this question, I realized that it should say if you indeed lock, because it's the other mechanism that relates to the question, question three. So I should clarify that. Are there any other options we should add here?
Go lay down. In the corner. Go. Lay down.
I hope that's a dog and not a child.
uh, Not seeing any hands, I'm assuming that
okay.
this is okay.
I think so. Go ahead, Marika.
So in any case, there's as well the other options so people can add if there's anything else. And this is an option where people can respond to multiple options. And I think I got an email from Matt who said that maybe we should clarify that in the question to make sure that people understand that they can take multiple options.
Marika, do I understand that circles mean you have to pick one of them and squares mean you can pick multiple?
Yes.
Okay.
That's right. And question six, do you lock a domain name upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant, i.e. where the complainant copies the registrar on an email serving the complaint on the registrant and the UDRP dispute service provider? Yes, no, or other, please specify.
Okay.
Question seven, if you answered yes to the previous question, what is the median amount of time it takes for you to impose domain name lock from receipt to notice from the complainant? And again, here I've suggested some time frames and really like some input from the working group there if these are reasonable and probably the most likely different regions that we can expect responses to. So it's from less than 12 hours, between 12 and 24 hours, between 24 hours and 2 working days. Between 2 and 5 working days, and more than 5 working days, and then again the option as well to say other, please specify.
It's Alan. My preference would be to use the word typical instead of median. Median presumes they've actually done an analysis. I don't care a lot, but I think it's more likely to result in an honest answer. Sherry?
I was just going to say, I think that time frames allotted are appropriate, so it gives lots of range, and it's probably within the range.
All right. Anyone else care on the median typical? Then, Marika, do what you want.
Sorry.
Yeah, I didn't forget to
read. Maybe just one comment on the time frames, Volker Grammann here,
yes.
Is that we are switching from definite hours to working days. Shouldn't that be hours on working days? Not sure, because at this point I wouldn't be able to answer exactly, because we'll definitely be in it more than 24 hours, even though it may be if it comes in on a weekend, but it still may be 2 hours on working days. So we should maybe write business hours.
Well, I suspect there are people who work non-working, who work 7 days a week, and we...
But...
If you really want this an accurate answer, you probably want to have them answer and then specify, are you specifying working hours, days, or calendar
yep.
hours, days? I'm not sure we need that level of specificity, though.
It's Lori. Do we want to say business days instead of working days?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so the only change here is to change business working days to business days. We don't make any specification on that.
I think the implication was we should put the same clarification on the first two. That is, the hours are on business days.
Yep.
Okay. So I just add on business days.
Now, do we care if someone actually works 7 days a week and responds within calendar days? I mean, they're actually saying our business is 7 day a week, therefore we're responding in 2 days or 1 day or whatever. I think this will give us a measure of how quickly people tend to respond, regardless of whether they work 5 days a week or 7 days a week. That's my level of comfort with it anyway. I don't know if anyone cares, feels that we need something with a higher level of control of detail. Seeing no hands. I don't know who's changing the request to microphones, but if you're doing that, you should take down the microphone also, because normally the person can't do it themselves. Go ahead, Marika.
So question eight, Nana, does your website list an email address that UDRP complainants should use to send you a copy of UDRP complaints? Yes, no, other please specify. Question nine, do you lock a domain name upon receipt of notice of commencement from the UDRP dispute service provider? First answer is not applicable, as domain name has already been locked upon receipt of a UDRP complaint from the complainant. Yes, no, other, please specify.
It's Lori. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you made a comment that it shouldn't be commencement but verification, right?
Yes. Because that's when we receive a verification request, that's one of the questions on it is the domain going to remain locked?
Okay, so I've noted that change. Question 10 then says, if you answered yes to the previous question, what is the median amount? I guess we say here as well, what is the typical amount of time it takes you to impose the domain name lock from receipt of notice from the UDRP dispute service provider, less than 12 hours, between 12 and 24 hours, between 24 hours and 2 working days, between 2 and 5 working days, more than 5 working days, and all that please specify. And already assuming that we make the same changes here to clarify that it's on business days and business days instead of working days.
Yes, and on all of them, thanks. Okay, no hands, go ahead.
Next question then is, when a domain name is locked pursuant to a UDRP, does the lock prevent transfer to another registrar? Yes, no, other please specify.
Didn't we already ask that?
Right, that's I think a question I put as well in the email, or at least I was intending to, because I think under question 5, we basically already asked, you know, what kind of lock is applied. So the question would be whether, you know, the questions, I think it's 12, 13, 14. Yeah, I think it's 12, 13, and 14, whether these are still necessary, as I think question 5 already asks the respondent to specify what the log does and doesn't do.
Yeah, I think the issue is we need a question similar to 5 following 9. It's not clear that whatever lock they may do at that point, I mean, at that point, they're only going to answer 5 if they said they do a lock. Now we've asked them about a lock at a different time, and I think we need to ask the same question. Conceivably, they could lock it. That's interesting. Is it possible that they may lock it one way immediately and then do some additional sort of lock on commencement? Sherry?
Hi. I only know from our RES sort of dispute policy, so it may or may not be relevant here, but we definitely ask for different locks at different times. So there's an initiation lock and then a final lock and transfer, and certain pieces can change along the way. So that may or may not be applicable to how registrars deal with UDRP as well. I'm not sure about that. But my input is that I am familiar with different locks at different phases of the process.
Okay, so should we be asking after question number 9, what locks do you apply at this point, or what locks exist at that point? Because conceivably, they could be adding a lock, you know, adding something to the previous set.
This is Margaret. Would it be easier to make it a question like, you know, if you answered yes to the previous question, if, you know, is the lock different from the one that, you know, you described in question 5, and if yes, you know, please specify the difference.
But that question 5, they will only have answered, I'm going back, if they had answered yes to the lock question.
Right. So if they didn't answer...
They won't even have answered question 5 if they had said no.
Right. But then they're asked to specify what lock is applied.
Well, that's the question I was asking. Do we want to ask which lock is applied after 10, or do we want to ask which things are locked? Because it could be a cumulative issue, or does what I'm saying make any sense to anyone? If they do a lock at both times and they're different, I think we're interested in what is locked at that point, not necessarily what have they locked. Just a minor change in the wording. So question five currently says, what kind of changes are prevented by the lock mechanism that you apply? And I think the question after 10 is, what kind of changes are prevented by the locks that are now in force, or something like that, in effect.
Okay. I'm just writing that down. Okay, so then we have a new question 10 that will be inserted. I think on the existing question 10, we already agreed to the changes. So do we replace then questions 11, 12, and 13 with that, you know, question on what changes are now prevented by the lock that you have applied? You know, if you answered yes to, I think, what is that question?
Don't we also need the answer? Yes, I think is we've replaced that set of questions by the one. But don't we also need a question saying equivalent to question four? What mechanism did you use? I think we should be essentially replicating the initial one of what do you do when you get receive the notice with what happens on commencement.
Okay. Do you also want to provide an answer then to people saying, well, nothing changes? I guess we should include another nothing changes from, you know, the initial log that was applied.
This is for question number.
Well, it would be the new question 10. The new question 10, if you're asking first, like, you know, what mechanism do you apply if you say yes? I guess the answer might be, well, it's exactly the same as the lock described on the question 4 and 5.
Wouldn't that mean that they had answered not applicable as domain already locked? Isn't that the same thing?
But I think that, because the question 2 basically asks, do you lock during UDRP proceedings? But that one is not specific in the time. So I guess people might, their answer as well, you know, the same what they would answer when we start asking about specific points at time at which the domain name can be locked. Or am I misunderstanding that first question?
Okay, I'm confused at this point, so.
I understood the first question as being a question saying, in general, do you lock names during UDRP proceedings? And we ask people to describe. And then we actually go into the detail of asking, well, at which point do you lock? Do you then lock at, you know, when you receive the notice? Do you receive it when you receive the verification request? That's how I read that question.
Okay, I think you're asking. I think you were asking, do we need an option saying there is no change because it was already locked, and I have no problem with that.
Okay, so other than, no, I think it might be easier as well, but people see it in writing if it all makes sense.
And I think so.
And I think as you discussed on the last call, you know, maybe it's helpful if some of the registrar participants can actually go through the survey and answer it and then provide feedback as indeed whether, you know, do all these questions make sense or if there are any further clarification or if there are any duplication in there that we should, should address.
Good.
Then we said to get rid of questions 11, 12, and 13, I think. I'm saying that right?
Yep.
14 probably as well. Let's see, because do we have that covered on the list of changes?
Well, we don't really have it with that caveat about proxy or privacy, but I'm not quite sure what it means. Does the lock prevent?
I'm wondering if this should be a separate option that's included in the question 5, which then will be replicated on, you know, which changes are prevented by the lock. Or do people feel that it's already covered what is described there in one of the options that is currently listed under question 5?
It's Lori. I think it's important to that we keep the part in about removing privacy, you know, as part of the verification process.
So should this question then be integrated in the question 5 as one of the options people can take as something that's prevented or is allowed?
It almost seems like, to me, it seems like it should be its own question.
Okay. And I said, you know, once you go through the whole questionnaire, if you still feel that, you know, it belongs somewhere else or it's not on the right spot, that's all easy to move around. Some question 15, if the UDRP is decided in favor of the complainant after expiration of the 15-day wait period after a decision, do you move the domain name into an account accessible only to the complainant? Yes, no, other, please specify.
Okay.
Question 16, if the UDRP is decided in favor of the complainant after expiration of the 15-day wait period after a decision, when is the lock then removed? Within 1 day after the expiration of the wait period, within 1 and 2 days after the expiration of the wait period, between 3 and 5 days after the expiration of the wait period, and more than 5 days after the expiration of the wait period, or other, please specify.
No,
I'm assuming that we should add here as well the business day.
And typically in the question. In this case, we're not specifying median or typically. We're just asking for a definitive answer always. And I think, again, we want to rely on average, typical, something like that.
And just to make sure as well, like from the, I think the registrar reps on this call, is this, you know, are these reasonable time frames that you think, you know, provide a good range of answers, or will everyone respond?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good. And question 17, if the UDRP is decided in favor of the registrant, do you unlock the domain name once the 15-day wait period has expired? Yes, no, other, please specify. Question 18, if you answered yes to the previous question, how quickly do you unlock the domain median time period? But I guess here we want to add probably as well then the typical time period. So within 1 day after expiration of the wait period, between 1 and 2 days after the expiration of the wait period, between 3 and 5 days, and then more than 5 days, or other, please specify.
Can I go back to the previous one? Under what conditions would someone say no? Is there any basis for asking them, do you blatantly refuse to give the domain name back to the registrant who just won the dispute? Anyone?
It's Lori. I suppose, you know, if the 15-day period has expired and they don't, and it hasn't been unlocked, and then they received a new court complaint, you know, or a new court, a dispute against the dominion.
Yeah, I mean, I can.
I suppose they wouldn't, but.
That's a real edge case.
The other thing I was wondering is, I know we're saying 15-day wait period, but because the UDRP says 10 business days, I wonder if we should change that to 10 business days.
And this is Marika. Is this one of the instances, because I remember the email from John Berryhill, is this one of the cases where there are two different time frames and two different documents? I remember he, I think, spoke somewhere about that in one place it's 10 business days, while in another place it talks about the 15-day wait period. Or is that related to something else?
No, I don't think I've ever seen the 15-day wait period listed anywhere. I was thinking, well, that's 15 days, you know, 10 business days is working regular days, calendar days. I'm just going by, you know, what the UDRP itself says, and it refers to 10 business days.
Okay, I can make that change and know if anyone else.
If somebody disagrees, then you know, absolutely, let me know, because I'm just going by probably most registrars are relying on UDRP itself.
Right. I'll mark the changes in red line so people can see what has changed and you know can comment accordingly if they feel it's not accurate or something was missed.
Okay. So, great.
Alan has already. I'm back on the call. He was disconnected. I think we just left off on question 18. I guess there we make the same changes as we discussed before, making it typical and adding the business period. And then we should probably as well, and if we change the wait period, we should just change it as well to the 10 business days. Or, as the language is in the UDRP. And then the question 19 is basically the last question of the questions that we've developed as a group. It's just an open-ended question where we're just asking those responding if there are any other issues or information the working group should take into account as part of its deliberations. So people here will have the opportunity to just provide any kind of information they think is helpful. And then
Marika,
yes.
Who's talking? Okay, I have a question. You are talking about languages. I don't know. I don't see. Please correct me if I wrong. If in any question there are something related to in what kind of language they received an UDRP petition, yeah. I don't know if it does must be clear maybe inside of this poll, yeah. It's just a comment. Yeah.
It's Alan. What question are we on?
We actually went to the survey. We're at the end of the question 19. I think because I explained that basically this is the end of the survey questions that we developed, and the next page basically looks at the charter question.
Okay. Thank you.
And to the additional question, there's no question indeed there on language, but I'm not really sure how that links into the question of locking or not locking and the details on that, but I might be missing something, so I don't know if that's a relevant question for the information we're looking for.
Okay.
One question to question 17 of the questionnaire. Should we maybe add another option of not implementing the waiting period in case of a decision in favor of the registrant, because if I read the UDRP correctly, the 10 business day waiting period only applies in a case of a decision of cancelled or transferred, not in case of a decision in favor of the registrant.
So can you just repeat, what should that option then read, not implementing the wait period because?
The question currently is do you unlock the domain name once the domain 15-day wait period has expired? Yes, no, others please specify. Should we maybe add another option we implement immediately?
But it's Alan speaking. I think what you're saying is the UDRP procedure does not call for a wait period here.
Correct.
So why are we introducing the concept? Why don't we just stop the sentence after the domain name?
That would be another option.
So you then would say, if the UDRP is decided in favor of the registrant, when do you unlock the domain name? And then you have the option saying, immediately after the 15-day wait period, or others please specify.
But there is...
Correct.
But there isn't a 15-day wait period.
No, that's apparently a 10-day wait period. I understand that there's a 10-day wait period. That's optional. Is that correct?
I
understand the UWP as there only being a wait period in case the decision goes in favor of the complainant, not in favor of the registrant. If the decision goes in favor of the registrant, the UWP, at least as published by ICANN, does not include a 10 business day wait period.
Or 15, you're saying.
Yes.
This is Lori. The only time that there's a wait period involved is after a decision against the registrant.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, we should basically just remove in question 17 completely the wait period and just ask, when do you unlock? And I guess then the options might be, what are then the typical ranges that you would suggest? Like within 1 day after receiving the decision or... as above, or
I don't think it's Alan. I don't think we need question 17 at all. You may want to include an option in question 18 of we don't unlock it, but I don't think we need it as a separate question because
Yeah, but we should remove the. In that case, we should remove the reference to the wait period because
in 18.
In 18, because there is no such period for decision in favor of the registrant.
It's after notification of decision or something like that.
Correct.
So to cover the edge case of we refuse to do it or we have some ulterior motive for not giving it back to the registrant, perhaps we want to include that as an option in, or maybe that's the other in the current 18.
Right, so I'm a bit lost now. So we make the change in 17, just removing the 15-day wait period, or we only leave question 18?
I don't think we need 17.
Okay, so how do we rephrase 18 then? Because now it refers to the previous question.
Instead of expiration of the wait period, it's after receipt of notice of decision in favor of registrant.
And then the question would be rephrased, if the UDAP is decided in favor of the registrant, how quickly do you unlock the domain name?
Correct.
Okay.
And a reference to business days again.
Yeah. This is Lori. Just for clarification, I just was looking at it, and 8A and B reference 15 business days, but that has to do with transfers to a new domain name or transfers to a new registrant or changing registrars during a dispute.
Do we need any further changes based on that, Laurie? Or
no, I was just for clarification because we were talking about the 15 days, and but the 10 business days only applies to decisions against the registrant.
Okay, thanks. Then I said there's question 19 where, in case we've left anything off, people have the opportunity to, add other information provide links to additional information we might want to look at. And then basically it goes to a separate page, the next page, and that's basically just asking for input on the charter questions, just making clear that this is optional, but I think as part of the outreach, the working group might also want to give the parties we're reaching out to the opportunity to just provide their feedback on the charter questions and take that as part of reviewing the comments received. And I think that's the end of the registrar survey.
Do you want input on the charter questions, or it's too late to change the questions?
Right.
What we're really offering for is are they offering us any advice on what we should do?
Exactly. Exactly. It links partly, I think, together with the outreach that working groups are required to do as well, the stakeholder groups and constituencies, where we typically, working groups typically ask them about, well, these are the charter questions we've been given. You know, any information you want to share with us or any opinions you have, please let us know.
I think we want to ask for essentially guidance on what we should do, not because as it reads right now, it almost sounds like we're saying, were the charter questions correct and how critique them. And that's
right, okay.
It's a bit late for that.
and I saw that said, I think, in the comments that Brian and David provided. I think there were some suggestions to, indeed, the charter questions, clarify those. But as you said, I think, we're unfortunately probably beyond that point, and, these are the charter questions we've been given and have to respond to. But, of course, in answering those, we might, provide
we can choose to create an interpretation of what the question really meant, because although I don't know if it's applicable in these, there are times when the charter questions were not phrased in the optimal way. But that's not something we're asking the people outside this group.
So I'll clarify on page 3 then that, we're looking for input on these questions and, to help inform our discussions. So I said what I'll do is produce a red line in Word of the charter, of the changes we discussed, and send that back to the working group so all of you on the call today can just review if it reflects what we discussed, and as well those that weren't on the call can provide additional input and or changes to those. Does that work for everyone?
Yep. I'm just curious, what does over quota mean?
Where is that?
Right at the end, you're saying standard options for over quota. Does that mean too many people
right.
are responding?
Yes, I think in certain surveys you can limit the amount of responses you want to receive. So I guess I can set here, I only want 10 people to respond, and that's enough.
No more than 4,000.
Right. I think it would be wishful thinking. Okay, let's then pull up the other survey.
While Marika's doing that, let's look at we're not likely to finish this next survey and go on and have any time for anything else. Are there any other items on the agenda that we need to address before we leave, though? Should we either do it now or allow time for it if there's something?
And this is Marika. I think just one question on 5. I already got feedback from several of you that you're attending, but there are quite a few people that didn't respond either. Maybe just a show of hands of those that are planning to attend the ICANN meeting in Prague and would be available to attend the working group meeting on the Thursday, I think from 9 to 10:30 that day.
I can't say for me, I can't say absolutely I can attend that meeting, but I will be in Prague. And 3 people have their hands up. Sherry.
No, I think it's showing hands.
Oh,
I'm assuming.
Oh. All right.
So I don't know if that means the others that are not showing hands, if they're not attending or might be participating remotely. Maybe they can put up a red cross if they're not able to attend at all. But I think otherwise we do have looks like we have sufficient people that will be there or participating remotely, which at least for now.
Remotely in the morning is a reasonable time in both Europe and North America. So it looks like we'll have some critical mass there or participating remotely.
Okay, excellent. So up the survey intended for UDRP providers, the first page there is the same. I guess here maybe as there are only a certain number of UDRP providers, I guess we might want to ask which one is responding, and so making that a requirement instead of optional. Would that make sense?
I would think so.
So then the first question is, in what percentage of UDRPs that you handle do registrars log the domain names at issue? And again, as I said before, I've just made up some ranges here, and then would really like to hear from especially David whether these ranges make sense, and then would give some valuable input to the working group. So the ones that are listed here is less than 25%, between 25% and 50%, between 50% and 75%, more than 75%, and other please specify.
Thanks, Marika. Look, from our perspective, that's, a useful way of capturing the ranges. We can respond to this question on that basis. You've got, of course, our textual suggestions on the provider questions already there, so it's probably not so useful for me to go over those all in detail unless you want me to. I think it might be useful, as I mentioned in the brief email that I sent in just before the meeting started, and I'm sorry that I was a bit late for it, it might be useful to consider as a prelude to this first question whether, and I very much agree with Alan, that it should be a requirement for the providers to identify who they are. Also asking the providers to provide some illustration of the number of UDRP disputes that they're providing the input data on. Because if we're talking about percentage ranges and medians, I think the information is going to be a lot more useful if we have an idea of what those percentages actually mean in terms of the numbers involved.
So we're looking at number per year or something like that?
Well, I think that the number of I would ask for an overall number first, if that's going to be the representative sample that's provided, or otherwise ask in the individual question for the provider to indicate the number and year of the range or size of the sample in the individual question. I'd probably ask the question generally overall at the outset, and then in each individual question, if there's a variation depending on the size of the sample, let that then be specified. So for some of the questions, I think we'll be able to provide data based on an all-of-case approach because we capture that information. And in some other instances, we're going to need to be looking at sample groups.
Okay, thanks, David. I'll have a closer look as well and putting these two together with the comments you submitted and the email you just sent so I can make those changes. And like with the other survey, I'll produce a red line so you have an opportunity then as well to see if that, you know, captured what you just said and wanted to change.
There was one other point that I just wanted to mention, which was I very much agreed with Alan's suggestion earlier, although we didn't put it in our comments. But the substitution, I think, of the use of the word typical for median is preferable also from our perspective. The other point is whether you also want to give some consideration to including in each of these questions an option which indicates that the requested data is unavailable. There will be some of these questions, I think, that we can provide very useful information on. There'll be others, I think, that we just won't be able to collect the data for.
So, David, just a question for you, because I think at least on the registrar survey, I think we're assuming as well that, you know, people will make a guess. I know that you have specific data available, but do you think others might, in cases where they don't have the data, still would be willing to make a wild guess, or you think that, you know, wouldn't help the survey and it's better than to allow them the option to say, we don't have the data?
I think that if we're going to ask people to make a wild guess, we should include provision for them indicating that it is a wild guess. I think if we want specific data, then we should be clear about that, because I think what we don't want to be doing is getting into a situation where we're comparing one set of data where some responses might be high precision and others might be, you know, shots in the dark.
I think it's reasonable for each question then to ask. Maybe we word it more politically than a shot in the dark, but...
I mean, an approximation or a best guess or, you know, an approximate estimate or something of this nature might be helpful. I mean, some of them, I think, from our perspective, are going to be quite speculative. So there's a number of the questions, you know, which invite the provider to give information on cases where the registrar lock, you know, may have prevented changes to registrant data. You know, in the who is or the registration information. And, of course, it's entirely speculative from the provider's perspective you know, what may have caused any lack of change. There could be any number of reasons for that. So that's going to be a difficult one for us to reply on, I think, other than at the level of a guess.
It's Alan speaking. Looking at question three,
yeah.
Does the provider actually know necessarily? I mean, you'll know if something horrible happens halfway through the proceeding that you think shouldn't have happened because it should have been prevented. But in the general case where things unfold as they should, do you even know if there's actually a lock in place or everyone's just being good girls and boys and not changing anything?
Well, the two ways that we ascertain that information is from the public who is, which, of course, anybody can access, and from the registrar's reply to our provider registrar verification request. So we know when the domain name is locked in reply to an RBR, but we have no idea whether or not the registrar is going to lock the domain in reply to the filing of a UDRP complaint that's copied to that registrar unless the registrar tells us. And that's something that we don't see in a lot of cases. So that's going to be a not quite in the shot in the dark category, but it's going to be something that we don't have a lot of information on.
Yeah, and in the registrar question, we're asking when do you lock it, essentially, and here we're simply saying, is it locked? Do we care about the timing from this question's point of view?
And this is Rika. Maybe an option would be indeed to add to all the questions and another button that just says, indeed, you know, requested data is unavailable, but you know, an estimate would be, and then allowing people to fill in what they think it is. So maybe that's a way of indeed separating out the, you know, the hard data versus, you know, guessing what it might be.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think that's a good suggestion, Marika. We can provide good data on the types of feedback we get from the issuing of the lock request in the RVR request that we send to the registrar, but I doubt we're going to be providing much useful insight on the median or the typical time period between the receiving of a copy of a filed complaint and when the registrar would then choose to lock the domain. It's just not something we track.
So this is Marika, as we're running out of time, and I know some people have already dropped the call, you know, maybe I can just indeed take what David has sent me and, you know, make changes on the basis of that and just send it out to the working group again so people can have another look at it and, you know, we can come back to it on the next call. Would that work?
I think given the time, we don't have much choice but to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Sadly, that means you have to make some decisions on your own, but I trust you.
I'm happy to make decisions and then are overruled again, so
well,
no problem.
it's all done in good faith. And good.
Exactly.
And good cheer.
Exactly.
All right, then we're 3 or 4 minutes before the hour. We have decided there will be enough people in Prague to have some level of working group meeting, but we're not in a position to do a public meeting. I think we decided that last time. And I give you all back 3 minutes of your life.
Alan, just one correction, because the meeting will be public. Yeah, no, I just want to clarify that the meeting will be public as such. It's not a close. I mean, unless you want to have it as a closed session, but it means that, you know, people can wander in and, you know, see us.
Yeah, I have no problem. It's a working group meeting, but it's open.
Right, and one thing the working group might want to consider is what other working groups have done typically as well, is, you know, have half of the meeting or three quarters of the meeting dedicated to real working group conversations, but allow at the end of the meeting some time for those that, you know, did make the time to come in to actually ask questions or ask clarifications or provide input, you know, to have a bit of a dialogue for if others have, you know, shown up to see.
I'm certainly fine with that.
Okay, that's all I have.
All right. 3 minutes to your back, or 2 minutes anyway. Thank you all for participating. We'll see you next week, I guess.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.